Welcome to this episode of the Cyber Guy Podcast. I'm your host, retired FBI Special Agent Darren Mott. In this episode, I'll discuss protecting the most vulnerable among us, our seniors. As always, if you have any questions following this podcast, feel free to send me an email at Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, at thecyberguy.com. Cyber is spelled C-Y-B-U-R. And if you like this podcast, feel free to give it a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening to this from. I do appreciate that. And any thoughts about future shows, feel free to send me that email and let me know that way as well. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, Mott, M-O-T-T. And I believe I have that LinkedIn account attached to the bottom of this podcast for easy connecting. So before I start talk about how to protect seniors, because this has been has come up a couple times in the last couple of weeks, friends of mine have called regarding their senior parents having some issues with potential cyber scams and things like that. So it got me thinking I should probably do an episode just on how to protect your seniors. And really, when you look at what I talk about, this really will fit anybody. It's not just going to protect seniors, and you should pass either the information or the podcast itself to anyone you think it would be of value to. It's going to be a pretty quick podcast. It should be an easy listen. I don't plan to talk for 2 hours on this, but there's a couple key areas I want to focus on, but this is valuable information for everybody. So everyone should take some of this information away to help protect themselves, because really, if you look at the cyber threat issue globally, the way to solve it is through a people-centric framework where people understand the threats targeting them, they understand their vulnerabilities, and that way they're able to lessen their risk. So before I talk about how to protect your seniors, I want to talk about a couple cyber news / cybersecurity items. And this is not so much news, but a couple facts I think people should be aware of just to understand the depth and the breadth of the cyber problem. So the first fact is that by 2021, this is by next year, the damage costs are predicted to be $6 trillion for all cybercrime damages worldwide. That's up from $3 trillion just a couple years ago. So the amount of loss being realized by businesses and individuals is staggering, especially with ransomware. Ransomware used to be a large nuisance and would cost a couple thousand dollars for companies to resolve from. It's now up to the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, depending on the size of the company. So this problem is huge. Business email compromise is another huge cyber threat where people get into the email account of companies and then they provide emails to accounts payable or other areas to wire transfer money to the criminal. So it's a huge problem. It's just going to get bigger. But with that, cybersecurity spending by companies is going to exceed $1 trillion between the years of 2017 to 2021. So we're probably already $750 billion into spending for items to protect you or your business from cybercrime. Not saying you should not purchase items. If you're a company, I'm not saying you shouldn't get firewalls or antivirus or you shouldn't have those on your home systems. You certainly should. But we are not going to spend our way out of this problem. It still comes down to education. The more people that can understand what the threats are and how to protect themselves and not become a victim, the less likely it is that you're going to have to spend a lot of money to protect yourselves or your business, and the less likelihood it is that you're going to lose money because of being victimized. Here's a key one. If you have kids in college or you have kids in high school that are trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives, by the end of next year, the end of 2021, there will be 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs worldwide. This is going to be a huge problem, and this is why cybercrime works, because there aren't enough people to deal with the issues surrounding cybersecurity. Sure, you have IT workers, you have those folks that handle your networks and make sure that your mice work and have a help desk, but they can only do so many things. There are not enough people, and really, the funding is there. Companies have funding for cybersecurity professionals, but there are not enough people to do it. So if you are in a cybersecurity role now, make sure you're maximizing your worth to your company. And if your company's not paying you enough, go find one that will. And if you are a high schooler or you're a college kid, if you can get into the cybersecurity world, The world really is your oyster. You will have a lot of jobs from which to choose from. We are seeing that a lot here in Huntsville. It is hard to retain good cyber talent because people will pay for it. So I would say that you definitely want to push your kids, if they're not sure what they want to do, but they're good at they're good technically, to look into cybersecurity as a job in the future. In 2019, the unemployment rate for cybersecurity was zero. If anything, now it's a negative. It's a negative number, meaning there are way more jobs than there are people to fill them. Lastly, ransomware damages are expected to grow 57 times between now and 2021. What that means is that there's going to be a lot of companies get hit with ransomware and are going to lose money because of it, either by lost in damages in trying to recover from the ransomware attack or by paying the ransomware companies. And there'll be an episode in the future just on ransomware and business email compromise, but just understand, I've said this before, ransomware works because of the people influence. In other words, someone is socially engineered to click on a link and open a document that causes the ransomware to launch. This is why people and education are the key things to protecting yourself, your business, and your family from becoming a cybercrime victim, is understanding what the threats are, which brings us to our topic today, and that is how to protect your seniors. So I've had a couple friends call me recently with some instances of their elderly parents having some issues with potential scam. What turned out to be scams. They were not victimized, fortunately, but there are plenty of stories of those individuals that have been victimized. I have a story when I was a supervisor at the cyber crime squad in Cleveland, Ohio. There was a lady who walked into the office, and actually a friend had brought her in because the lady didn't realize she had been a victim, but she had got an email that she had won a lottery online. And so she just needed to send, you know, $5,000 to get the $2 million that she won in this lottery. Well, you can probably already guess she really didn't win any lottery. But at the end of the day, by the time someone stepped in to help her, she had wire transferred $200,000 to individuals overseas thinking that she had won a lottery. So it's very easy to victimize seniors, largely because they come from an era of trust where you think the best of most folks. You tend to trust people, especially if it sounds like someone is authoritarian or has authority, if you will. So it's very easy to socially engineer folks, especially on the phone or on the computer, because, you know, a lot of our seniors are not as technically savvy as those of us in more middle age or the younger generation. And so they enjoy the technology, but they are not necessarily aware of the threats targeting them through that technology. I went to Clark Howard's website. Clark Howard is a very famous money guy, and so he has the top 10 financial scams targeting seniors. So if you go to clark.com, you can kind of see this and talk to it. And a lot of these scams have migrated to the cyber realm. So I'm just going to read them real quick and then kind of talk about some of them specifically that I've seen within the cyber realm that are really targeting the seniors. One is Medicare and health insurance fraud. Health insurance fraud and health insurance crime is probably the number one white collar crime issue that the FBI deals with. A lot of it is fraud regarding doctors and prescriptions and things like that. But certainly with Medicare and the amount of information you need to have to understand your health insurance, it makes sense that this is a huge fraud area. Counterfeit prescription drugs, funeral and cemetery scams, fake anti-aging products, phone scams, internet fraud. That's just, those are more general terms. Then you have investment and timeshare schemes, reverse mortgage scams, sweepstakes and lottery scams. I've kind of talked that a little bit. And the big one is the grandparent scam. So what the grandparent scam is, I'm going to talk to this one because I personally experienced this one, not to any loss, but it kind of happened where, because of social media, it's very easy to get intelligence about people and their family and things of that nature. So if you have your kids have Facebook, they have Instagram, TikTok, whatever the social media device or social media application is of the day, they are generally probably giving out way too much information that cyber criminals are finding very valuable, such as, hey, my grandmother just inherited $1 million from her mother or something along those lines. Information that if I'm a cyber criminal and I see that, I'm going to say, okay, how can I find more information about this person and who they're grandparent is? And so the way the grandparent scam works is they get information about the grandparent and the grandchild, and then they contact the grandparent pretending to be the grandchild, and they acquired the the grandchild's email address, or they create a fictitious email account that looks like it comes from the grandchild, send the grandparent an email that says, "Hey, grandma, you know, I'm traveling overseas with a school group or with a church group, and my wallet was stolen, and so I need money to get back. Can you wire transfer me $1,000?" And grandma, being afraid for the grandchild, goes and wire transfers the money. Now, ideally, what would be best would be for grandma to call the parent and say, "Is little Johnny really overseas?" and find out that there's not. That was my experience. My mother called me and said that my son had called her. They used the right name, said, "Hey, Grandma, this is Patrick. I'm overseas and I'm stuck. Can you send me money?" So she called me to say, "Is Patrick in London? And does he need money?" And I said, "No, Patrick's sitting right here, you know, eating his Cheerios." So needless to say, no money was lost there. But that needs to be the first thing to happen, is if you get a phone call, an email, or anything like that regarding a grandchild, that particular grandparent should contact the parents or figure that's probably a scam and just ignore it, because it likely that it certainly is the case. So that's kind of the grandparent scam. It's pretty common. If you have not experienced it yet, chances are you will at some point where something odd like this will occur. So a couple key things that seniors should really understand, and this is probably the biggest one, is never give unsolicited phone call customer service personnel remote access to your computer. What I mean by that is you may end up on a web page, and these web pages can pop up if you mistype the URL. So let's say you're going to google.com and you misspell Google, you put three O's in it. A window may pop up that says, "Your computer's been compromised. Contact customer service at this number to fix the problem." And again, if you're not technically savvy, you may look at that and say, "Oh, that's not good. I guess I better call it because my computer is telling me I have a problem and I should call this customer service number." So they call the number. The person on customer service says, "Oh, yes, we can see that you have been hit by malware. I need you to give me access to your computer." They will send an email with a link. The person clicks on the link, and that gives the bad guy on the other end remote access to your computer, where they can pull passwords, they can get access to your email accounts, they can get access to your banking accounts if you've stored the passwords in your browser, things of that nature. And what's better, the better thing here is never engage in unsolicited phone calls at all. There are plenty of those going around. They're not so much cyber crimes per se, although a lot of these entities are using voice over internet telephone to mask their location. And you've probably all experienced this, where you got an email from an area code that's familiar to you. So for example, I live in Huntsville, Alabama. Our area code is 256. I do not get 256 spam calls because my cell phone is 704, which was the number I got originally when I was in Charlotte. It's just followed me everywhere I've gone to. So I know now, I think I have one or two friends left in Charlotte, and they rarely call me. But if I get a phone call from a 704 area code, I know it's a scam call. It's either something about my credit card, or something about an extended warranty on a car I no longer have. Who knows? So I tend not to answer those calls. But that should be the going option for most folks. If you don't recognize the number, if it comes up and it doesn't give the person's name, because now with cell phones you can link the name with the number so you can very quickly see who's calling you, then you know it's a legitimate call in most cases. So you should never respond to unsolicited phone calls. Two of the big ones going around are IRS and Social Security Administration calls, where the IRS person says, "You have back taxes, we have a warrant for your arrest, and we're going to come arrest you if you don't go and get $500 in gift cards and send them to us." And generally, if you've gotten down the road where someone is asking you to go to Walmart or Publix or whatever your closest grocery store is and get prepaid cards and send them the number on the back, you know it's a scam. Hang up and move on with your life, because there's nothing good that's going to come with that. Another thing to be aware of is be careful how you store passwords. Now, let's have a discussion on password creation and storage and security here, because really, at the end of the day, the biggest problem anyone is going to ever have is having their computer or their information compromised because of an email they received, a phishing email where they clicked on a link or they opened a document. So first off, you should have multi-factor authentication on all of your accounts, meaning you get a text message or some other login option, a third type of code that gives you access to your email or your bank accounts at a minimum. If you really don't want to do multi-factor authentication, at least have it on your email or on your banking information. that makes it almost impossible for anyone to get into your account because they can't get the text message or the whatever the other code is to get into that account. So you should at least do that. But when you're creating passwords, now here's what you have to understand with passwords. In order to have a secure password, it has to do with the length of the password, not the number of different symbols and codes and stuff like that. Now, people will argue will argue the other way on that, but there's a website you can go to. You can put in your password. It'll tell you how long it'll take to crack, but people don't trust it, so I'm not going to give that because I don't no need to increase the risk there. But just understand that the longer your password is, the more less likely it is it will ever be cracked by any kind of current cracking software. If you're part of a data breach where your login and password information was stolen from some online account, and the data breaches happen quite frequently. There have been literally thousands with billions of user accounts and passwords compromised. If you use the same password everywhere, you are in big trouble. So when you go to change your password, make the password long. But people then say, well, how do I remember what it is? Well, there's a couple ways around this. If you create it like a phrase, so let's say that, this is the example I would give in presentations. Let's say if you are in Alabama and you're an Alabama, University of Alabama fan, then you can create a password that says Alabama football. How did I say it? So I love Alabama football, Auburn sucks. If you are an Alabama football fan, you're going to remember that password. Now, the key is don't use that password everywhere, but say, I love Alabama baseball, Auburn sucks. You've changed the baseball and the football, but you have a different password. It's 31 characters. A, you can remember it, and B, it's never going to get cracked. There is no technology currently that's going to crack that password within the next trillion years. So chances are you're pretty safe for now. Well, now quantum computing comes around, we may have a different discussion on this. But for right now, it's all length. If you're 13 characters or longer on a password, you can pretty much count on if that password file is compromised and it's encrypted, it's not going to get cracked. So go ahead and use phrases that you can remember for your passwords. I also recommend using some kind of password storage system. I use a program called Password Keeper. There's plenty of others. There's tons of others. Apple has their keychain. There is TruePass, I believe, is one. There's a lot of different password storage applications. Find one you like that might be cheaper or might be free. And do some research on it and see if it looks safe. And if you like it, feel free to use it because that'll encrypt your passwords on your device and you can easily access them. If you don't like that idea, and chances are our seniors are going to have problems using that kind of technology if they're a little more advanced in age, there is nothing wrong with writing down your passwords. Now, you may say, writing down your passwords, that cannot be a good idea. Well, I'm not saying write down the passwords and tape the password piece of paper to your monitor, but write down the passwords, fold it up, stick it in a book, and put the book on your bookshelf. You're the only one who knows where it is, and unless you are robbed by a Mensa member who's stealing all your books, your passwords are going to be pretty safe. So do not store them on a Word document on your computer that's easy to find, it's not encrypted. So store them in an application, write them down, put them in a book, put it somewhere safe, put it in a safe, write down on a piece of paper, stick it in a safe. Again, no, you're as safe as anywhere else. So that's the key on passwords. Again, it's length, and make sure you store it somewhere. Cause I probably have 100 passwords. And if I didn't have a password app, I would never be able to remember them all. All right. So one of the big things that seniors are probably engaged in is social media. Everybody's on Facebook, Instagram, or where have you, because it's how you see pictures from your grandkids or pictures from your sister or your brothers that you're separated by thousands of miles. And there is nothing wrong with social media in the sense of that particular aspect where it gives you information. Just be careful how much information you provide on social media. For example, if you are traveling to go see your grandkids, do not put on social media, leaving for a week to go see our grandkids. All that does is tell the criminals, hey, that person's house is now empty for a week. And chances are that the Facebook account is in real name, and it's not that hard to figure out that John Smith lives in Huntsville, Alabama, and I can find his house, figure out his address with online information that's readily available, and I can go rob his house because I know he is out of town for a week. So just not saying don't use social media. I'm saying be careful how much information you provide on social media. Next, you need to explain to seniors that it's highly unlikely they will find love online. One of the biggest scams that we dealt with in the FBI from a criminal perspective is folks who would contact us because they were in an online relationship with someone and they sent them thousands of dollars. The way this generally runs is you find someone online and you start a communication and they use social engineering to make that person feel like they have found their soulmate and they want to come visit, but they have surgery on Friday and so they need to, in order to, they have to pay $1,000 for this surgery or they can't travel. Can you please send me the $1,000? Oh, sure. Because now the person thinks they're in love. They want to meet this new person. So they'll send them the money. And then all of a sudden they need money for the plane ticket. And then all of a sudden their car broke down. There's all sorts of ways for them to keep trying to get the money sent to them. I have talked to a lot of banks who have fortunately, depends on the area you're in, but some banks are on the lookout for this now, and they will look for those people who will go look, who will show up saying, hey, I need to wire transfer $5,000 to this person in Nigeria or this person in Paris or this person in Russia. And they've kind of recognized that these are part of this love scam thing. And so they at least will try to stop them. The problem they get into is that people say, oh, no, you're wrong. I know this is my soulmate, and so I really want to send the money. Please send the money. And the bank can only go so far as trying to stop that. But you as the family member should be on the lookout for those type of things. If you have a widowed or a widowed parent and all of a sudden they're wire transferring money to their new boyfriend or their new girlfriend somewhere else, you need to get on top of that and probably stop it, because chances are that is not the case. They have probably not found love, and therefore they should probably not send the money that way. A couple other things, homeowner and reverse mortgage scams, just be leery of this. A lot of this comes down, again, to the business email compromise scam that I'll talk about in future shows, but essentially with this is the scammer gets into the email account of the mortgage company, the realtor, or the closing attorney, and they'll send an email to the person buying the house or getting the reverse mortgage and telling them that the closing cost should be wired to this particular bank account, and it turns out to be a scam bank account. So I would recommend that if you have an elderly parent, that you help them or at least have some knowledge or some insight into their financial accounts so that you can kind of look for those kind of odd transfers, that odd movement of money, because really targeting of seniors generally revolves around scamming them for money. There's really little else that they're looking to do there. There's no intellectual property that you're going to steal from. It's looking to get as much money out of the seniors as they can. So just keep in mind that you want to, if you have a senior, just ask them for assistance or ask them to give you access to their financial account so you can kind of track that and be on the lookout for it. So some resources that you can look for that will go into more depth on this. One of them is a website called internetsafety101.org /cybersecurity-seniors. And I'll put these resources in the description of this podcast so you have easy access to it. But that particular site has information on protecting seniors on the internet. Another one is www.protectseniorsonline.com. There are some cybersecurity best practices on that website. There is cyberinsure1.com has a place for online safety for seniors. And then if you are victimized, if your senior parent or your senior grandparent or relative is the victim of a scam, there's a couple places you can go to. There's one place you should really go to, and that's ic3.gov. It's the Internet Crime Complaint Center. It's ic3.gov. And what you can do there is if you have emails that the scammer has sent to the victim, you can put information in there about what happened. Now, there's no guarantee you'll get any money back or anything like that, but if the target or the subject, the bad guy, I should say, is domestic, this is an FBI site run by an FBI unit in West Virginia, and they gather intelligence on all sorts of online scams that are going around at any time. And if they have the capability to identify a particular scam artist, cases have been brought out of this reporting. So have that available if you need to report a crime. Again, it's IC, the number 3, cyberguy.gov. One other thing I would recommend, and if you're a senior listening to this or you're part of a senior group, I recommend you contact your local FBI office. There is the Office of Private Sector is an outreach program that every FBI office maintains, and they will get speakers to go and talk to community groups to talk about threats. You can ask them specifically, hey, I belong to this group, and we'd like to talk about cyber threats specific to our area, or get more information on that, or if you want information on Medicare fraud or anything that's of interest to your group. And this is not just for seniors. This is for any group. So I'm kind of speaking to everybody on this one, but avail yourself of that service. It costs you nothing. The FBI will send an expert out to talk about any of the topics that you might necessarily need. Now, will they get to you tomorrow? Hard to say. Depends on how big the program is, how busy the folks are. But chances are, if you call and say, I'm looking for a speaker for A, B, and C at this time, chances are you'll get someone at some point. This was for the last 4 to 5 years of my service here in Huntsville. I did dozens and dozens of these outreach presentations yearly. I really enjoyed it because my thought process was the more people I can get to understand what the threats are, I can protect them so they don't become a victim, and that way they don't need to call the FBI when they become a victim. That's really the goal of the FBI's outreach program in general, is to protect everyone. Businesses obviously can do this as well. Contact the outreach program and they will come do presentations at your business. If for whatever reason, if you are in Northern Alabama and you can't get a hold of the FBI to come talk to you, feel free to give me a call. I'll be happy to come talk to groups or if they want. But obviously, with the COVID thing, chances are there's not a lot of in-person presentations going on right now as it is. If, however, I will say this, if you are located somewhere other than Huntsville, Alabama, and you have a group and you'd like to do a webinar, I'd be happy to put that together and do a half hour, 1 hour online session to talk about cyber threats. I have plenty of presentations and cover all sorts of areas. Feel free to contact me again at Darren@thecyberguy.com if you feel that's something to do. I'd have to find time in my schedule to do it, but certainly someone I'd be willing to entertain. So I thank you for your time. Thanks again for listening to the Cyber Guy podcast. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, share this information with whoever you think would be deserving of it. One thing I'll end on this note. A friend of mine, Colin, said he didn't like my bumper music, the intro and outro music. However, it was free. It's royalty-free music, so that's what I was looking for. If it's free, it's for me. I don't want to pay for music that I have to pay a royalty to. If you are a musician and you want to create a music for my podcast, I'd be happy to play it and give you all the credit in the world for it. So feel free to email me if you are a musician and just want to share your music with me. Other than that, thank you again for listening. Make sure that as you go through your day that you understand the threats that are targeting you, assess your risk, and proceed wisely.